You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Cade Young. This is the WFHB local news for Tuesday, August 10th, 2021.
Later in the program, we revisit a feature from WFHB correspondent Tilly Robinson about the state of Indiana restarting federal pandemic unemployment benefits, despite Governor Eric Holcomb's attempts to end them earlier this summer. That's coming up in today's feature reports.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Indiana has not issued a statewide mask mandate, despite all of its 92 counties posing either high or substantial risks of transmission. But first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill gave an update on the coronavirus to the Monroe County Board of Health. At the August 9th meeting, Caudill talked about the rising number of COVID-19 cases in Monroe County. She said that 57% of eligible county residents are fully vaccinated, but the Delta variant is spreading quickly through non-vaccinated residents.
We may still be in yellow this week in terms of that advisory, but we're going to be very close to orange. So I do believe that if we can get people to continue to vaccinate, mask, practice all the various layers of prevention, use every tool that we have in our toolbox, that we can curb this. But the Delta variant is definitely much easier to spread. That's really what seems to be what we're seeing in Indiana the most.
Board member Ashley Craner asked Caudill if she had discussed enforcement with the county commissioners. Caudill said that the commissioners approved a contract for compliance officers. She clarified that fines were on the table and that closure was a last resort option. Legal counsel Margie Rice clarified that the county has discretion when pursuing compliance cases. She said last year, every case of noncompliance with COVID-19 restrictions was solved with voluntary compliance.
We would always reach out to the to both the complainer and to the business owner and see if we could sort of figure out what the facts were. And once we felt like we had a pretty good understanding of the facts, and sometimes that required us to use the enforcement officers to do a little investigation for us, or sometimes I had to reach out to the police department and see what I could find out from dispatch records or police records to find out and verify, you know, that he said, she said, and figure out what the facts were. But once we felt like we had a pretty good idea of the facts, we would address how do we quickly get in compliance and how do we get voluntary compliance. If we didn't get, pretty much every single time, we were able to get voluntary compliance.
The next Board of Health meeting is August 23rd.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommend everyone in Indiana to wear a mask, regardless of vaccination status. According to data from the CDC, all of Indiana's 92 counties are at either high or substantial levels of risk. Over the last 7 days, the Indiana State Department of Health reported 27 new deaths. Hospitalizations have also increased. On Monday, the State Department of Health reported that the total number of hospitalized COVID-19 patients is about 3 times as many patients who were hospitalized just 1 month ago. Meanwhile, Governor Eric Holcomb has not issued a statewide mask mandate, despite CDC guidance. The governor says he will leave it to local governments, businesses, and schools to issue their own mask policies. This comes after pressure from state lawmakers who have criticized the governor's executive authority when it comes to enacting public health orders. The recent uptick in COVID-19 cases, deaths, and hospitalizations follows a trend from the week prior. During the state's July 30th COVID-19 press conference, State Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box walked through rising coronavirus numbers during that week. Dr. Box warned of COVID-19 variants on the rise, particularly the Delta strain of the virus.
A year ago, we were dealing with one strain of the virus that caused COVID-19. Today, we're battling multiple variants, but the biggest threat is from the Delta variant, which is fueling our current increase in cases. This variant, which was first identified in India, spreads more than twice as easily from one person to another compared with other strains. The CDC has compared the infectivity of the Delta variant to that of the chickenpox and measles, which means that each infected person can infect an average of 8 or 9 other people. It has surged to become the predominant variant nationally and in Indiana since May and represents more than 90% of the samples we sequenced in July. Keep in mind that not every positive COVID case is tested to see if it's a variant. New data show that people who are infected with the Delta variant have higher viral loads. This means that they have more virus in their body than people who were infected with previous variants. We are seeing this in many of the long-term care outbreaks that are currently happening. The majority of those cases involve the Delta variant.
According to numbers from Our World in Data and the New York Times, 44.7% of Indiana residents are fully vaccinated. This is about 6 percentage points below the national average. Indiana Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lindsay Weaver addressed Indiana residents who are hesitant to get the vaccine.
Many Hoosiers are still in that nearly 50% population that hasn't received a dose. Some are still fearful about the vaccine. To those, I say, research credible, science-based sources. These are the most studied vaccines given our robust event monitoring systems and the fact that millions, including almost 3 million in Indiana, have already received this vaccine. I encourage you to talk to people who have gotten the shot about their experience. Find someone you trust to discuss your fears. And if you need someone to hold your hand for your vaccine appointment, find that support person. Others think that they are invincible or that if they get COVID, they will have a mild case. While it is true that if you are young and healthy, you most likely will do okay, but that is not always the case. As is evident in the stories we all see in the news of people who are fighting for their lives this very second in ICUs in Indiana.
According to the CDC, a small percentage of people fully vaccinated against COVID-19 will still develop the illness. These are known as vaccine breakthrough cases. The CDC assures that symptoms might be less severe or even non-existent in these breakthrough infections. It also assures that the vaccines authorized for use in the United States are effective against most variants. However, as with any vaccine, there will be breakthrough cases. The CDC says that it is monitoring breakthrough cases for patterns and that experts continue to study how common these cases are. Dr. Weaver touched on the relationship between the Delta variant and recent breakthrough cases. She stressed that only a small number of Hoosiers have seen breakthrough infections, and that almost all recent deaths from the virus occurred in those who are unvaccinated.
We also have started to hear concerns about breakthrough cases, with some people questioning whether the vaccine is effective, if they would still end up getting COVID. I want to stress that breakthrough infections for vaccinated people are still very low and tend to be mild. But we are finding that they are more likely with the Delta variant than they are with any of the other strains that we have seen. No vaccine is 100%. We hear every year from people who have received the flu vaccine but still get the flu. But vaccines do prevent many cases of illness and are especially effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths. 98% of the new COVID-19 vaccines we have seen since January are occurring in people who are not vaccinated. 96% of our deaths have occurred in unvaccinated individuals.
Individuals who are 12 and older are eligible to receive the vaccine. To find a vaccine clinic near you, visit ourshot.in.gov or call 211 if you do not have access to a computer or require assistance. Dr. Box says the increase in cases leads to a higher demand for testing, especially now that schools are coming back into session.
If you are a close contact, get tested, even if you're fully vaccinated, even if you're asymptomatic. If you become symptomatic, even if you're fully vaccinated, get tested and wear a mask until you are symptom-free and you have a negative test result. This change in guidance reflects the increase in COVID-19 activity that is being fueled by the Delta variant and the fact that vaccination rates are still low in many populations and areas of the country. With schools coming back in session at full capacity, I encourage every district to follow these recommendations. These are now local decisions, but the guidance is universal. We all want to have a full return to in-person learning with minimal disruptions and outbreaks, and believe that layering our mitigation strategies such as masking and vaccination, contact tracing, isolation, and quarantine will allow us to achieve that goal.
To find a testing site, you can visit coronavirus.in.gov and click on the COVID-19 testing information link.
The Bloomington Plan Commission discussed a rezone for Wheeler Mission Ministries. At the August 9th meeting, Senior Zoning Planner Eric Grulich presented a request to rezone a section of land acquired by the petitioner. He said the petitioner was requesting the rezone so they could expand their use to the new buildings.
They have facilities on the northern and southern buildings and just recently acquired the building in the middle of the property. And they would like to expand their use on the site to this additional building. And so they are requesting to rezone the property from mixed-use employment to mixed-use medium scale in order to allow for their use to be legitimized and to allow for the expansion.
Director of Wheeler Mission Ministries, Dana Jones, talked about the expansion. He said the extra space would let Wheeler Mission spread out beds and open more space for other activities.
We'll provide an area to place 84 beds from our current facility, thus providing much needed room to prevent overcrowding and assist in preventing the spread of COVID and other communicable diseases. The operations in our newly acquired building will reduce the population in existing 215 Westplex property, where meal service, case management, and residential programs will be located.
During public comment, residents complained that residents of Wheeler Mission often wandered away from the property and created a mess. Jones argued that many of the people in question were not residents of Wheeler Mission. Commissioner Susan Sandberg suggested that a larger conversation about homelessness in Bloomington should be had at the city council level, not at the plan commission level.
Right before us tonight is the issue of moving this to the city council, and I'm thinking that might be a more robust discussion, actually, than we can have here at the plan commission level. But I certainly would be open if it is the will of this body to hear this again. But I'm thinking the problem here is more intractable than anything that the plan commission is going to be able to address.
Commissioners voted to send the request to the city council with a positive recommendation 8-1, with Israel Herrera dissenting.
We know that following the local news cycle can be challenging, especially with the hustle and bustle of our daily lives. So, to catch you up on what you might have missed, we provided a rundown of yesterday's news.
Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown started the August 5th Monroe County Election Board meeting by introducing its new Democratic representative, Shruti Rana. Board Member Rana promised she would work hard to ensure fair elections.
I just, want to let everyone know I'm going to be working hard for our community and doing whatever we can to ensure the fairest elections. And I hope that people will feel comfortable asking me questions, telling me how things are going, and that I'll have a chance to meet as many of you as possible in the coming months. So thank you again.
The Monroe County Election Board also discussed Richland precincts. Election Supervisor Karen Wheeler presented a request to change to remove the county designation for Richland precincts 1, 2, and 8. She said these areas will always be considered town, and removing the designation will eliminate some redundancies.
We split every one of them to town and county, and there was a reason that we did that. At this point, we really don't need Richland 1, 2, and 8 to ever be county. As probably most of us know, that Ellettsville does have a tendency to annex certain areas, but this is town and they're never going to make it county. It's always going to be town. And if I can be able to get those back to only town, Richland 1, Richland 2, and Richland 8, that will just eliminate three different ballot types that I will not have to make them. And there should never be a reason for that ever to happen.
Board Member Hal Turner asked if this decision could be reversed if things change in the future. Wheeler said it was, and board members voted to approve the change unanimously.
A group of students challenging Indiana University's mask mandate has requested that IU's policy be reviewed by the Supreme Court. The appeal, which comes as part of an ongoing lawsuit, follows previous rulings against the students in federal district and circuit courts. The students have been seeking a preliminary injunction against the policy, which would prevent it from going into effect while the court deliberates on a final ruling. Preliminary injunctions are occasionally issued by courts to prevent changes from going into effect before the court has ruled on their legality. To receive a preliminary injunction, plaintiffs must show that their case is very likely to succeed in court, and that they will suffer irreparable harm if the injunction is not issued. The lawsuit, originally filed in June, alleges a wide range of infractions on the part of Indiana University. It claims violations of Indiana's vaccine passport law, 14th Amendment rights to personal autonomy, bodily integrity, and to reject medical treatment, and the COVID-19 vaccine emergency use authorization requirements of complete, informed, and voluntary consent. The plaintiffs also argue that, for the relatively young population of Indiana University, the risks of receiving the vaccine outweigh the risks of contracting COVID-19. Lower courts have rejected the students' request. Judge Damon R. Lechte of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Indiana wrote that the students failed to establish a sufficiently compelling 14th Amendment claim or justify the extraordinary remedy of a preliminary injunction. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously affirmed the district court's ruling, again rejecting the 14th Amendment claim. Indiana University is currently mandating vaccines for all students, faculty, and staff in the 2021 academic year. Initially, IU intended to require proof of vaccination, but shifted to a self-reporting system in the wake of controversy surrounding Indiana's vaccine passport law, which prevents local government entities from requiring proof of vaccination. IU has also recently reinstated their indoor masking requirement. The student's emergency request will be reviewed more quickly than most Supreme Court appeals. The court has previously ruled against coronavirus measures, although the outcome in this particular case remains uncertain. For WFHB, I'm Robert Robinson.
Up next, we revisit a feature from WFHB correspondent Tilly Robinson about the state of Indiana restarting federal pandemic unemployment benefits despite Governor Eric Holcomb's attempts to end them earlier this summer. We turn to Tilly Robinson for more.
Unemployment benefits in Indiana have been in flux for the past few months. On Monday of last week, Indiana officials filed a second appeal asking the Indiana Court of Appeals to stay an order compelling the state to continue paying federal pandemic unemployment benefits. The appeal marks Governor Eric Holcomb's continued efforts to halt Indiana's participation in three federally funded, state-administered unemployment programs. The governor first announced his decision to withdraw from the federal programs in late May. Citing help-wanted signs across the state, he contended that generous federal benefits discouraged Hoosiers from returning to work, making it hard for businesses to find employees. At an Indiana Department of Workforce Development briefing on July 16th, the state's Chief Unemployment Insurance Officer, Regina Ashley, explained the programs, which were first authorized under the CARES Act last year.
Those include the $300 weekly add-on, that's called the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program, or FPUC. Also, the benefits to independent contractors, gig workers, and those otherwise not eligible for unemployment, referred to as the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA program. Third, the extension of benefits beyond the normal 26 weeks, called the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, or PEUC. These programs will be retroactive to week ending June 26th.
When Governor Holcomb's order went into effect after the week ending June 19th, over 200,000 Indiana residents saw their unemployment benefits reduced or eliminated, according to data from the Century Foundation. However, after two legal groups filed suit, Marion County Superior Court Judge John Hanley issued a preliminary injunction. The preliminary injunction from late June required the state to continue paying the federal benefits until a final decision is reached in the case. Professor Kenneth Dauschmidt, who studies labor and employment law at the Indiana University Maurer School of Law, explained the legal dispute over pandemic unemployment in Indiana.
A group of five workers and concerned clergy in Indianapolis filed a lawsuit in the Marion County Court, and they asked for an injunction against this suspension in benefits. And the basis for their argument was, under Indiana law, the state is obligated to apply for all federally provided benefits that are available for unemployment compensation. And these benefits, these extended benefits under the CARES Act, are paid for entirely by the federal government. And so when Judge Hanley was presented with this lawsuit and the request for an injunction, he looked at this and said, there's a very high probability that the plaintiffs are going to prevail here. And currently there are more, the balance of the cost is in the plaintiff's favors. In other words, not giving an injunction is going to cost the plaintiff some money, whereas giving an injunction and having the state pay these benefits, any costs that there are to the state are very speculative because the federal government pays for all these benefits. And so I think the injunction was quite properly granted. The state, of course, didn't like the injunction. They appealed it once to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals first has said, no, the injunction is properly granted.
The state's newest appeal argues that the Marion County judge abused his discretion when he issued the preliminary injunction. The state maintains that the governor can withdraw Indiana from the federal programs at his discretion. Last week, the Indiana Department of Workforce Development resumed paying federal unemployment benefits. Unemployed Hoosiers could file retroactively for benefits owed beginning the week ending June 26th. Economists have expressed mixed opinions about the effects of expanded unemployment benefits on the labor market. Christoph Kleiner, assistant professor of finance at IU's Kelly School of Business, explained the rationale for cutting the federal benefits.
Now, several states, I think actually 26, so over half of the states, have decided to try to cut off these extended unemployment benefits. Indiana is one of them. The argument for cutting them off is that a number of businesses have said that they face labor shortages one way or another. They're essentially trying to hire workers and they just aren't able to get them.
However, Professor Kleiner cautioned that reducing unemployment benefits is no panacea.
We still have reasons why people, for one reason or another, might be out of work, right? So one is just that, you know, that we do have a pandemic going on and people might have health concerns, and so they're not looking for jobs, right? Another one is that, you know, a lot of, you know, daycares, you know, summer camps, things like that are not going on like they normally would. And so people actually need to stay home, especially during the summer, to watch over kids.
Professor Dauschmidt suggested that the expanded benefits might be part of a broader trend in which employers must improve job compensation to attract and retain workers.
The unemployment compensation benefits probably had some effect on low-wage workers not returning to work. But I think doing away with those benefits isn't going to magically clear up the problems in the labor market. I think that employers are going to have to increase wages and benefits. Wages and benefits have been flat for decades now, mostly because of globalization and downward pressure on wages and benefits from competition with low-wage countries. And now we're kind of seeing, this is the first time in decades we've really kind of seen a turnaround for that. And I think employers are going to have to increase wages and benefits, not only for their new employees, but also for their existing employees.
Although the fight over unemployment in Indiana is a microcosm of a changing labor market, it also affects Hoosiers at an individual level. Lane Fulton, 27 years old, lives in Elnora, a small town in Davies County. He's been unemployed throughout much of the pandemic.
It's been off and on since the top of the pandemic. I worked in food service post-grad school and got furloughed because food service jobs were furloughable, if you will. So I got furloughed from that, and then I was on unemployment from like May until August.
Although he landed a job with the nonprofit organization Hoosier Action between August and December last year, he's been unemployed since the beginning of 2021. Lately, he's been busy volunteering and filling out job applications.
And it would not be an exaggeration to say in the last year, 9 months, I've probably done over 1,000 job applications for career work across the United States.
he's been able to ride out the back and forth over unemployment compensation in Indiana, but he worries that other Hoosiers may not be so lucky.
I planned ahead. I budgeted actually to not have any income whatsoever until September. I know many, many simply cannot do that. They have dependents. They have various debts that they have to pay. They have mortgages, all these different things that can come into effect that I do not have working against me.
Lane has been receiving benefits through the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA, program. PUA provides unemployment benefits to independent contractors, the self-employed, and those seeking part-time work. However, although Lane filed for regular state unemployment last summer, he did not start receiving state unemployment benefits when the governor put PUA on pause. Lane thinks that's because the state claims they overpaid his benefits earlier in the year. Now, he says, the state is asking him to return an exorbitant amount of money.
So the state actually wants me to pay back over 11 grand of unemployment, which is basically about two-thirds of that 30 weeks, about 20 weeks worth of unemployment, back to the state.
And Lane isn't alone. According to Indianapolis television channel WTHR, thousands of Indiana residents have been told they were overpaid. Regina Ashley, the chief unemployment insurance officer, said that Hoosiers who receive overpayment notices can appeal or file a waiver with the Department of Workforce Development.
DWD notifies claimants if it's determined that they received an overpayment. The person then can appeal that determination. Additionally, and this is important, the claimant can also request a waiver. Yes, Indiana does have a waiver program, and it applies to the regular program as well as the federal pandemic programs. All claimants are notified about the waiver process on their overpayment notice that they receive from the department. There's also information on the waiver process on the DWD website and in the COVID FAQs. If a claimant appeals or if they request a waiver, there will be no attempts to collect the overpayment until those processes are resolved.
Overpayments aren't the only issue that faces Hoosiers navigating the unemployment system. WTHR obtained internal data from the DWD, showing that the agency had 2.6 million unresolved unemployment claims and 27,000 pending unemployment appeals as of late April. DWD Commissioner Frederick Payne denied that the agency was experiencing a backlog.
We have processed more than 90-something percent of the claims that have come through our shop. So more than 90%. If there is someone who's waiting beyond 21 days, there are some complications.
Indiana's unemployment rate hovered at 4.1% last month. This preliminary number suggests that unemployment remains similar to its level in May, but down from its high in April 2020, when 16.9% of the Indiana labor force was unemployed. Commissioner Payne expressed an optimistic view of the state's unemployment numbers.
Now, we've seen some positive swings in areas like leisure and hospitality and manufacturing. There have been some minor fluctuations here and there in our monthly unemployment rate. Much of that is due to individuals who are seeking work, but they've not yet landed the job of their choice. So we're moving in the right direction.
The unemployment report for July will be released late next month. For WFHB, I'm Tilly Robinson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Tilly Robinson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. For WFHB, this is your engineer and executive producer, Cade Young.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Planetary Radio, a program dedicated to space exploration. Coming up next on WFHB.